Today on Maine Calling, financial retirement planning. Are you planning to retire someday? Do you think you'll be able to afford retirement? A new AARP survey finds that 61% of Americans who are 50 plus worry they will not have enough money to retire. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we talk with syndicated personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary about ways to prepare for retirement. She'll give us guidelines for creating a monthly retirement budget, figuring out when to start taking Social Security, whether reverse mortgages are a good idea, and how to use the 4% rule. And she'll answer your questions about personal finance in your later years. This program is the second in our two-part mini-series, Thinking About Retirement. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Maine Farmland Trust, working this summer to purchase and protect the historic Morris Farm in Wiscasset. Learn more at mainefarmlandtrust.org. By Welch and Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, supporting Maine island communities through education, health, and community engagement. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are talking about retirement again today, but with a different angle than yesterday's program. Yesterday, we discussed how the concept of retirement is changing and how it can be a difficult transition emotionally. Today, we're talking finances, how to be sure you have enough money to be comfortable in retirement. Our guest, personal finance expert, Michelle Singletary, and we will answer your financial questions related to retirement planning and other money matters as well. Michelle, as you know, is a nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for the Washington Post and the author of 4 books about personal finance. Michelle, welcome back to Maine Calling.
Oh, thank you for having me again. Love to be here.
Well, I am so excited to talk to you and so excited to talk about planning for retirement. If you and the audience have a question for Michelle, you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, one of the things we learned on yesterday's program is that most people end up retiring earlier than they think. That the average age people say they're going to retire is 67, but the average age people actually do retire is age 62. So I'm wondering, when you hear a statistic like that, and also with the knowledge that the first thing a financial advisor is going to ask you when you want to talk about retirement is, what age do you plan to retire? Help us think about that. Think about how we plan for this thing that we actually don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, that's the most difficult thing about retirement planning, because there's a lot of what ifs or when it's going to happen. And so what I try to tell people is to have a best case scenario and a worst case scenario. And so what people find is that they want to work longer, but maybe health challenges come into play or other family obligations. Like, for example, your aging parents might need your help so that you have to leave the workforce, or perhaps your adult children begin to have children and they need your help. And so you go help your grandkids. And so you really ought to have a couple of plans in place. The plan that you think everything is rosy, everything will go well, this is when I'm going to work as long, and all those numbers. And then life happens, retirement plan. And you got to be prepared. My husband and I actually started doing retirement planning probably about 15 years out before. And I'm so glad we did, because so much changed. For example, we had planned to take my health care insurance into retirement, but my company ended that. And my husband worked for the federal government. And I'm so glad we were speaking to my best friend. And she said, well, you know, you have to be on the government's health plan for 5 years before you retire in order to take it into retirement. We had missed that rule. And he was planning on retiring. And so he ended up working longer so that we could qualify under his health plan, so that if we retired before we hit that 65 age mark where you can get Medicare, we would have coverage. See, that's why you got to think of it long term. And our best case scenario changed because some corporate policy changed. So you just got to be very flexible when you create that plan.
So better to have a plan that's going to change than not have a plan at all.
That's right, because it's in the planning that you find information that you need. Like just talking to my friend, it's like, yeah, we're gonna do this. She was like, did you think about this? And that helped. But what if we had gotten right up to the door and didn't realize that we needed that extra 5 years? And as it happened, my husband actually ended up retiring even earlier than we had planned because of a workplace situation where it was a difficult, it was very, it was rough. And he was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. But he would have had to stay in that very difficult situation had we not done some pre-retirement planning.
I know you have daughters in their 20s, and I'm wondering when do you tell them to start saving for retirement? When's a good time to start investing in your own retirement?
So we have three adult children in their 20s, one who this week is turning 24. So happy birthday, Jillian. And then we have a son who is 26 and a daughter who's 29. And so when did we start talking to them? When they were in their strollers? No. Kidding. So we instilled in them the concept of saving for their future, which includes retirement. And I know a little 2-year-old's like, listen, I just need to learn how to go to potty. But we tried to lay the groundwork into why it's important to save for your future. So by the time they got to their 20s, the argument to save for retirement was less difficult. Now, I'm not going to say that it was completely easy. Now, these three kids grew up in a household with two parents who are great savers, live below their means, and we spent months trying to persuade them to put money in their retirement account. Because in their 20s, they're like, that's too much money, Mom. Like, I'm not making that much money. You crazy. I cannot do this. And so we just, I mean, I just mostly me, my husband's much more patient than me. I'm just like, you better put that money in their retirement account. And so the way we finally persuaded, at least the oldest one, is that my husband set her down and he showed her that if you start now in your 20s, you could be a millionaire by the time you hit your 50s. And she was like, ding, 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 I'm sold. And so you've got to, sometimes it's not easy, even when you are in a household of savers, but you got to hammer it into those. You got to stay after them, run after them, just like when they were teenagers. You can't tell them something one time. And fortunately, it's sticking in. And so we're really happy the way they are saving. And they're going to be much further than even my husband and I, where we are right now.
Let's fast forward into your 40s, 50s, and 60s. I know you're an advocate of creating a monthly retirement budget, thinking about what my monthly retirement budget will be and having that be a goal. Given inflation, given everything else going on in the world, how does one create a monthly retirement budget?
So, really, retirement budget is the same as your budget before you retire. It's gonna the line items are gonna change somewhat. But when you're in retirement, you still gotta have housing. You still gonna eat. You probably still gonna drive, hopefully till your 80s, maybe 90s or 100. You still gotta pay insurance. The difference is some of the expenses are gonna be more. So where you, in your 30s and 40s and 50s, you might have childcare and those kind of issues. That's gonna be replaced with health care. And so you just switch out some of the expenses, but the principles still stay the same. And one of the things that I'm a big advocate for, and it's a little controversial, is to get rid of your mortgage before you retire, because most people spend anywhere from 20 to some folks, if you live in a high cost area, 40 or 50% of their pay or their income on housing. Imagine if you got rid of that expense. You know, you still got to pay taxes and, homeowners insurance and things like that. But if you got rid of 20 to 30% of your expenses in retirement, it makes it a little easier to make those numbers work when we hit periods of high inflation. And so my husband and I both agreed that whoever retired or if we retired together, we would not go into retirement with a mortgage. And we paid off our mortgage before he retired last year.
But you do have one caveat on that, right? That you don't want you don't want someone to pay off their mortgage if it means it's going to make them cash poor, right?
That is correct. I'm so glad you mentioned that, right? Because I get in trouble too. It's like, what? No, I don't want you pull if you if, don't pull all your money out of your retirement because there's tax consequences with that. There's consequences with Medicare, the premium. So you want to be prudent about that. So you don't want to be house rich, cash poor, meaning all your money is tied up in your house. And we were not in that position. So you're absolutely right. You got to be very smart about that. But if you hopefully in your 20s and 30s and 40s are trying to make extra principal payments and get that mortgage down. So by the time you hit retirement, you don't have to pull out a whole lot of money to finish it off before you retire.
And I know a lot of you started this comment by saying, I know this is controversial, but the reason it's controversial, Michelle, isn't it because so many people of a certain age have locked in a really low mortgage interest rate, maybe in the 2% or 3% range. So they're thinking to themselves, why would I pay down my mortgage when I could be making more money in the stock market or somewhere else?
That's right. So I wrote a column when my husband retired that we paid off our mortgage and a gasp. We had a 2.75% interest rate. You would have thought I slapped somebody's baby. I mean, they were just like, oh, you're crazy. How could you give up this money? And I get it. We, especially now that inflation is high, people are thinking, how could you get rid of that cheap debt? But look at the full picture. This is why planning makes a difference. So we had the money set aside. We have been paying on our principal. Why would we continue to pay interest? Because you gotta know the numbers. 2.75 of a big mortgage is still a lot of money. So you can't just look at 2.75 and say that's cheap money. It's not cheap money if your mortgage is 400,000, 500,000, 600,000 in some areas, right? And so we looked at that. And because we don't have a mortgage, my husband, now a year in, going on 2 years, does not have to touch any of his retirement money because we don't have that huge expense on our books. And so we got rid of the interest that we were paying, even at 2.75. That's still thousands of dollars. We don't have to touch his retirement money. And we've seen how the market has been. It's been up and down. And so we're able to let that money still earn money. And so we are not, worse off having gotten rid of that cheap debt. And really, just honestly, I know you said the show yesterday was about, the emotions of retirement. Listen, every time I had to pay that mortgage every month, I was just cursing. I mean, I hate that so much that if it was a person, I would slap it. And every month, I am a happy camper that I don't have to pay some bank some money. I go around touching my wall. This is my wall. This is my bush. These are my floors.
I
And
want to
there's
see a
like a
video of
lot of people.
that.
I actually shared it on my social media. There is a psychological euphoria when you don't owe people money. We owe nobody nothing. And it's just, if there's such freedom to that. Now, we did a lot of things to get to that point, right? But it's just so wonderful. And we are so comfortable because we don't have that large debt. And it doesn't mean that we can't take that money and put it in the market. So we increase the amount of money that we were putting in a non-retirement account. So y'all, we're sitting pretty and we don't owe anybody anything. So that is the beauty of not being in debt.
Okay, I'm going to ask another big question. I have a feeling I know what your answer is. Catherine Collinson on the program yesterday gave us her answer to this unsolicited. She just wanted people to know this. When should we be taking our Social Security?
That question, man, it has stumped so many people much smarter than me. It is a very individual decision. And we read a lot about, oh, you need to wait till you're 70 or, wait till your full retirement age. And it is true. If you wait after your full retirement age, For most people, the annual increase is about 8%, right? And that's guaranteed. So you can't get a guarantee like that in the market. That is true. But life happens. You know, somebody gets sick, or maybe the income that you thought you were going to get from a part-time job is now dried up. And so you have to look at your situation. If you're 62 and you're struggling and you need that money to pay your bills, then you take it at 62. And you know, my husband and I had a huge argument. He was like, I'm taking it at 62. I'm not waiting till 70. And so we revisited that. And now he's working a little part-time. I should say no, he's working a part-time job at our church. And so we decided that because we don't need that money, we might as well let it continue to grow until we need it. And so now we probably won't take it till we're 70, but not because of some, you know, benchmark or some rule. We don't need it. I'm still working. Our money is still in the market. And so we have a guaranteed way to have a certain pot of money, because the Social Security is an annuity. So we've got an annuity that is still growing, and we don't have to do anything for it. And so that's why we're waiting. But like, my sister will maybe be retiring in, you know, a couple of years or so, and she might not be able to wait till 70. And I've told her it's okay, because you need that money to live on. And so you got to really look at your own situation, not just some rule of thumb.
And you know, I'm so interested in the fact that your husband has gone back to work part-time. His story fits so much into what we were talking about yesterday, that retirement doesn't look the same for everybody, and maybe explore something you might be interested in that you didn't do in your career. And I suspect you didn't work for the church for most of your married life. And I'm
No.
wondering. So we've thought about, you know, maybe taking a part-time job emotionally, and what it might do for our sense of self, or our sense of self-worth, or even, you know, how we structure our time. But what about financially? Is that a big part of the equation, or is it not really about finances? Is it about something else?
It's all of the above, Jen. Some people find that they had a plan, and when the expenses came in, it wasn't enough. And I've got to go back to work at least part time to make up the difference. Some people want to transition to a different career, or they want to have some interest. My husband's a deacon, and so we run a financial ministry program at our church. And so some of the leaders said, "Hey, will you come and help run? You know, help supervise some of the ministries." And it's part time. It's a light lift. He loves work doing it. He was actually kind of doing some of it anyway, so now he actually gets paid. And so for him, it was just something else to contribute. So we don't need the money from the part-time job. In fact, we're probably going to take that money and do some more investing and help our adult children. So you really have to look at your situation, and no, nothing is, it's not a wrong answer. If you've got to go back, it's not like you failed in your retirement plan. Life changed and the numbers didn't quite work. And so you go back, or you want to be able to have something when you get up in the morning to go to. You know, there are studies that look at people who are active in retirement and doing stuff and engaged. They live longer. But you know what? It is also okay if you're like, I don't want to work at all.
I
I
want to
want
binge
to sleep.
Netflix for a while. Yeah, or PBS Passport.
Exactly. Exact. That's okay too. The most important thing is you want to be do what's happy, and it's going to lead you to have a productive life. Because some retirees, their whole personality is wrapped up in a job, and when they retire, they actually go down because they don't have anything to look forward to. So I think you need to be careful about that as well. That if that's you, and you just seem depressed or lonely, perhaps a part-time job or some community work or something will give you a reason to get up and out of the bed every day.
So I have so many more questions for you, Michelle, and I know our audience does too. I want to talk about reverse mortgages. I want to talk about Medicare, but we do have to take a break. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org, or you can find us on social media or Facebook. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about personal finance, especially when it comes to retirement and retirement planning. My guest is Michelle Singletary, award-winning national syndicated personal finance columnist, and the author of 4 books about personal finance. You can sign up for her newsletter, The Color of Money, by visiting the Washington Post website. Join the conversation. Ask Michelle a question by email, talk@mainpublic.org. You can comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Michelle, I want to ask you about reverse mortgages here in Maine, especially people who live in southern Maine. Housing prices and housing values have skyrocketed. And I think there are probably many people listening to this program right now who bought their home 30, 40 years ago for $80,000, and now it might be worth $800,000. What do you think of using a reverse mortgage as a way to help pay some of those bills in retirement?
Yeah, you know, I think you have to look at a reverse mortgage the same way you look at other debt. Now, there's a unique quality about reverse mortgage. It basically you don't have to pay that debt until you either pass away or move or sell the home. And so if you've got a lot of cash locked up into your home and you need some bridge money, a reverse mortgage may work for you, but be very careful about that because it's still debt. And here's the other thing. There are a lot of people who take out a reverse mortgage and they run through the money fairly quickly. If you're going to need like an extra $2,000 every month, you know, to make it do, a reverse mortgage might not be the way to go because you're going to run through that money fairly quickly. So you need to look at everything, what's coming in, and whether or not you can use that money as a supplement, not to cover all your expenses. That's kind of the rule that I think works for people in terms of reverse mortgage. And please understand what it is, because lots of people don't realize, you know, especially if they had planned on leaving a home or leave the money from the house to their heirs, because, you know, the interest is ticking up on that mortgage. And so by the time they either pass away or move or want to sell, they may get out of that mortgage, there may not be a lot left over. And so the good thing about reverse mortgages, you have to go through housing counseling, HUD approved housing counseling, and they can walk you through all of the ins and outs of a reverse mortgage. I'm not one of these people who says absolutely not, but I think you tread very carefully when considering this. But if you've got enough fixed income coming in, and you just need some help here and there, maybe for some home improvements and things like that, then I think a reverse mortgage can work for you.
Mm. And before we go to the callers and the emailers, one more question I want to ask you. How might people think about Medicare ahead of time? It seems to me that a lot of times people think, oh, when they're 64, oh boy, I'm turning 65 pretty soon. I need to start thinking about this. What would you like those of us who are a little younger than 64 to think about and know ahead of time?
Yeah, you know, Medicare is so complicated because there's, you know, all kinds of Advantage programs and Medigap. I mean, it's, oh my gosh, your head just explodes when you think about it. So again, the key to a good retirement planning is research, research, research. So don't wait until you're knocking on the door of 65. You want to look at what coverage you have now, what coverage you can combine with Medicare, what are the different types of plans. Like my husband and I, through his federal health insurance in an HMO, which we like, that might not be for you. So we might go with a Advantage plan that continues that same type of coverage, or maybe you like to pick your own doctors. And so all of this is going to take some work. The Social Security Administration actually has a pretty good website to sort of walk you through a lot of these different options. AARP is a great source to read and figure out what is best for you. But don't let the salespeople tell you what's best for you, because, you know, around open enrollment, and it's coming up now, you'll see all these commercials promising all kinds of things. So don't look at the commercials, because you're going to see them, but don't make your decisions based on those sales pitches. You want to go to an independent source to help you walk through what's best for you.
All right. Well, I'm going to go to John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead. We're not hearing John in Portland. That's okay. I'll go to an email question. This is from Maggie. She writes, I am turning 69 in November and have not collected Social Security. My partner of over 25 years takes care of our bills, and he insisted, against everyone's advice, not to take Social Security until I'm 70. My Social Security is smallish, but he explained I would get a yearly 8% bump. So, when can I apply for that 70-year-old bump? I own my home and do not have debt, not even credit card debt. I owe nothing and have a measly savings account of $30,000.
Oh, Maggie, I'm so glad you don't own anybody. So now is the time to contact Social Security. I would recommend that you make an appointment with your local Social Security office and go in and have them talk to you about the right time to put that application in. Because once you hit 670, there's no reason to wait after that whatsoever. You don't get any more money. So she's right in the period where this is a good time. And, you know, she's 69. So why not wait to that extra to get that extra 8% for this last year and then just go ahead and apply. But call, if you go to Social Security Administration online, just type that in and go to the search bar. You'll be able to find information about a local Social Security office. Sometimes you can do a telephone appointment. I think if they have in-person, go in-person. Take all your information and let them walk you through the application. When do you put it in? When does it kick in? And all those kinds of things. But good for you that you could wait that long. And yeah, you don't need to wait any much longer after you turn 70. That's a good birthday to get that money. That's a good birthday present.
We're going to go to Gary. Gary's calling from Sanford. Hi, Gary. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing? I retired from the government, and the government's retirement plan is called TSP, the savings plan. And it was pretty good size when I retired. And I had the option of taking an annuity, leaving it alone, or taking it out. So what I did was I figured out how much I would get if I took the annuity. And then I figured out I took some of it out and bought an apartment building and paid cash for it, then I would get almost the same amount. And when I sold the apartment building, I'd get all my money back. And so that's what I did. I bought an apartment building for cash. I paid the penalty for taking the money out early. That's what I did.
Well, I'm happy it worked out for you. Michelle, I'm guessing that you're going to say that's kind of risky, though.
I would say it's risky. And I'm sure and hope that Gary did all his work because you introduced more risk in terms of your money. So keeping it in the TSP, it's going to earn what it earns. You get the risk depending on how you were earning it. Now you added on more risk because an apartment building, renters move out, roof collapses, you know, all kinds of things can happen. So you introduce more risk. Now, if you can handle that risk and you've got another savings pot and you could say if half your renters move out, you can cover that mortgage. I'm sorry, you said he paid for cash, but you know, home improvements and things like that, then sure. The key here is to make sure you know what you're doing. I do not want to own any property outright. I want my money to work for me while I'm sleeping. I'm not fixing nobody's toilet. I'm not coming in the middle of the night because the lights went out. That's me. Gary might be okay with that, right? Or you might hire a company to take care of that. But you got to look at all the numbers because even though he paid cash for that, there's maintenance, you know, and then you're sort of getting your money month per month as opposed to having a big pot of money. And so again, you know, what worked for Gary may not work for you, but I'm glad it's working out for him. And hopefully he did all his research and he got it. I'd hate to hear him say he took a penalty. And if he meant he took it out before he was 59 and a half. I'm not happy about that, Gary. I wanted you to keep that money in there. But you know, it's already done. So that's okay. Just be careful about especially when you hear things like that. It worked for him, may not work for you.
All right, Gary, thank you so much for calling. We'll go to Lisa, who's calling in from Barrington, New Hampshire. Hi, Lisa, go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Hi, Michelle. I'm 57, and my husband and I are thinking about retiring. We want to diversify some of our investments, and someone suggested whole life insurance, which at this point in our life is going to be very expensive, but They're talking about tax benefits to that. And I just wanted to hear your opinion.
So when you say people, they talking about, they meaning the salesperson?
He calls himself a financial advisor, but, you know, he's a salesperson.
But he's the one selling it to you, right?
Yeah, but, you know, other people that we've talked to said that it could be a good investment.
So who's these other people?
Friends of the family.
Uh-huh. And are they experienced financial people?
Yes.
So, and when you say, you said yes, meaning they sell whole life insurance?
No, just people who have looked into it and just know a little bit more. You know, so far we have a lot of money in the market and straight up savings. And so we were hoping to diversify some of that.
Yeah. So you see why I was asking you those questions, right?
I do. I do.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So you can't, you know, they and them and Sister Peaches and them, you can't, they're not reliable. I'm not a big advocate for whole life insurance. It's very expensive. You tie your money up and it doesn't sound like you need to do that. If you are investing well, why would you have to tie it up in a whole life policy? And you don't need the insurance, I would assume. And so I think you should be looking at your financial portfolio. And really, perhaps the best case for you is to hire a fee-only financial planner, someone who's not going to be selling you any products, but just looking at your entire financial situation, your insurance needs, how much money do you have saved for your living expenses, you know, your retirement plans, and look at everything. Don't talk to they, don't listen to them. Talk to this professional and have them look at what you have and whether this type of insurance is appropriate for you. It is appropriate for some folks, not all. I don't want to give up control over my money. And I don't want to buy very expensive insurance.
Lisa, thank you so much for calling and asking a question. I'm sure others have as well. While we're talking about insurance, Michelle, I want to ask you what you think of long-term care insurance.
So most of us are going to be at some point in need of long-term care. And basically long-term care is that you need help with daily activities, taking medicine, going to the bathroom, dressing. And most people don't have enough money to take care of those expenses when they come due, when you're, you know, typically in your 70s or 80s. And so long-term care insurance is that bridge to help pay for it. Back in the day, if you had a policy that covered it until you passed away, they call it the Cadillac plan, there aren't many out there, that was the way to go. Now they're more hybrid type of plans, and it's not, and there's like usually lifetime limits. And so if you, there's a narrow group of people that it makes complete sense for. And the time to think about it is when you're in your 50s, because that's when it's going to not be as expensive. As you get closer to 60 and 70, it's very expensive. So you want to look at these policies to see what it covers, what's the lifetime limit. So maybe it'll give you a couple of $1,000 a month if you need to go into a living assistance facility or memory care place. So long-term care insurance definitely has a place in your financial plan. If you can afford the policy and keep it in place. And the industry has gone through a lot of issues because they underpriced it. And now people who bought it are seeing their premiums go up. I can't tell you how many seniors are like, oh, it was started at a couple thousand or a thousand a year, and now it's like 7,000 a year. So those are the kinds of things that you have to consider. Will you have the money to keep it in place for 20 or 30 years, the truth is. Now, my husband and I decided not to get long-term care. We decided that we can afford to self-insure because we've been saving for 30 plus years. But that not everybody is in the position that we are in. So certainly as you're looking at your retirement plan, you want to think about long-term care insurance. And if you can't afford the big plan, maybe you get a plan that will help with what you already have saved.
An email here from Jeff. If you reach the threshold of 72 and a half years and have traditional IRA funds that require the RMD clause, so I believe that stands for required minimum distribution clause, How does that impact Social Security payments? Additionally, can you reinvest the withdrawn RMD monies to benefit future inheritors?
Right. Well, that's a lot of questions packed in there. So basically, RMD payments, it's like at some point the government's like, listen, we allowed you to save all this money all these years. We want our tax money. So, and the law has changed. It used to be 70 and a half. They've changed it. And eventually I think it's going to be 75. And so at some point you got to start pulling that money out. And so the answer to the last part of the question is, sure, it's your money. Once you pull it out and pay taxes, you can do whatever you want with it. You can reinvest it and save it, and you'll be great. And because you're pulling it out, you can put it in a non-retirement account. And so you don't have that minimum requirement at some point. You do need to look at, so Social Security, after you earn a certain amount of money, your Social Security payments is taxed. So it could be that if you are a really low earner and you're not paying taxes or Social Security, taking that withdrawal could increase the amount of taxes you pay on Social Security. But you got to take it. So you kind of like don't have a choice. So you might look at, you know, every year where your money is held, they should tell you how much you have to take out. So you take that out, and you really, it's one of those questions where you got to pay it no matter what, because that's the law. But definitely think about it. So you might want to do this. My husband's been talking to me about this. You want to, as you're getting close to that 72 or those limits, maybe start taking out withdrawals before you hit that, so that that impact isn't as high when you do hit it, because there is I know I'm trying to get so technical here, but if you take out a lot of money and it increases your annual income, it could in fact impact the Medicare premiums that you pay only for a couple of years. So you have to take that into consideration. So this is why it's important to know your numbers and perhaps talk to a financial planner so that you can plan out when you take those payments, if you want to take them before you hit that age limit where you have to take the payments.
So many questions coming in from Michelle Singletary. We're talking about retirement planning and other personal finance. Answering your other personal finance questions. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we are getting personal finance advice about retirement and other matters from the Washington Post personal finance columnist, Michelle Singletary. Michelle is also syndicated all over the country. Share your comments or questions with a quick email, talk@mainepublic.org, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. A question here from Paul. I'm a few years from retiring, and I've been contributing to my company's 403b plan. I have a decent amount of money saved. My company is now offering a Roth option. What should I be thinking about whether or not to put money into the Roth versus the 403b?
That's such a great question. You know, I love that people are really thinking this through. So for those who may not know, Roth, you put money in after it's been taxed, so that then when it comes out, it's not taxed. And so not as many companies used to have a Roth IRA in their workplace plan. Now many more do. My husband and I actually was faced with this same decision. You know, do we keep putting it into, in my case, a 401k, in his case, the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan for the federal government. We looked at our tax situation and realized that we're probably going to stay in about the same tax bracket when we retire. So really, it's a wash for us. We get the tax break now, and it doesn't necessarily put us in a better position to have the money into the Roth. So, and especially when we were saving to send the children to school, to college, and, you know, we were young folks trying to make our way, we wanted that tax break then. And so I think in this case, Paul, you have to look at where you think your tax rate is going to be when you retire. And if it's going to be in a way and much higher, then a Roth might make sense for you now. Realizing that if you do that, then you don't get that tax break now. So we decided to take it down. Now, some people say, well, you know, tax rates might be higher in the future. They may, or they may be lower. So it's really, you don't know. So you make the best decision based on your personal situation. For us, it's a wash, right? We're gonna have to pay the taxes now, or we're gonna have to pay it later. And so we've just decided that we're just gonna take the tax break now.
An email here from Bruce. Lots of folks who consider a reverse mortgage might consider selling a lot of land from their property if their land is big enough. Under Maine's subdivision law, If your primary residence for 5 years is on dividable land, you can sell up to two lots without creating a subdivision and stay in your house. You can also sell to abutters without tripping the need for a subdivision review. Well, Bruce, thanks for that tip. And Michelle, I think it speaks to there are some creative ways that people can make some money that are outside of what personal finance advisors talk about every day.
That's right. Or, you know, the other thing is maybe you've got this house. It was great for your large family, but you no longer need all that space. So you could just sell, downsize, and use that, put that money, in a real diversified, perhaps even conservative plan and live off of that. And then you don't have to take on debt. So I think that's the whole point, Bruce and Jen, that you just look at different options, but make sure you get the information from somebody that's not going to benefit from your decision. You can listen to the salespeople, but make sure you get information from people who are truly going to help you make the best decision based on your needs and not their ability to make money off of those decisions.
I'm going to go to John, who's calling from Portland. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. just a quick comment on whether you should take your benefit at 62 or 65. Each case is different. I'm well aware of that. But if somebody is financially able to, there is an advantage to taking it at 62, even though there's a reduction. And the average benefit is about $1,800 a year. So if somebody took it at 62, 12 months, they'd take in over $20,000 a year. If they put that in the bank and didn't touch it, by the time they reach 65, they'd have around $65,000 in the bank. If they waited till age 66, they'd have $80,000 in the bank. So if people are financially able to, there is an advantage. The disadvantage is, well, I'm going to take it at 66 or 65, but the person dies before they even collect anything. Therefore, the family survivors have lost out on $65,000 to $80,000 in benefits. I don't know whether that makes any sense, but...
I understand your theory, and it does make sense for some, but a couple of things that you have to take into consideration. Your Social Security payments, you know, you're going to get some cost of living increases that may not get if you just put it in a regular bank account. Now, right now, we have a lot of high yield bank accounts, but once the Fed gets inflation in control, a lot of those rates might go down. So you may not actually be getting enough in those savings accounts to keep pace with inflation. That's one thing. And the other thing is this is guaranteed increase year over year. So if you don't need the money, you know, there's so many uncertainties in our financial life. This is a certainty. And so perhaps that's best for some people. And the other thing is, John, you sounds like you're very disciplined. I'm disciplined, Jen's disciplined, but a lot of people are not. And so they take that money and then they spend it and then it's not there. And so I always look at how people handle their money through their working career to see, because it's not going to change when you retire. If you are trifling with your money before you retire, you're going to be trifling after you retire. And so I'm very careful about telling people to take on some of these strategies that require discipline. So you put the money in a bank and your adult kid says, oh, you know, daddy, mommy, I need money for X. And you pull it out. Now it's not there for you. And some people just don't have, now, if my kids come, you ain't getting my money. I can say no, but a lot of people can't say no. And the good thing about having the Social Security payments, the annuity, is that it's coming in every month and it's there for you and you take out that risk. And then the last part he said about your heirs, well, listen, that money was intended for you. And it's great if you save it and it's for your heirs, but if something happens, you wait and then something happens to you. I don't think anybody should feel any regrets because that was a decision that you made and it should, I don't really think you should look at your Social Security as some pot of money to leave to your heirs.
John, thank you for your question. We're going to go back to Portland again to Sol. Hi, Sol. Go ahead.
Hi, great to talk to you. I'm 31, and I'm calling in because you mentioned financial planners and no-fee planners. So my context is that I got a financial planner when I was working as a teacher in Massachusetts, and I was making a little bit higher of a salary back when I was about 25. And since then, I've gone part-time. I've entered a PhD program. So my income has been hovering around $20,000 to $30,000 a year. And I've still been able to save and put stuff in my, you know, IRA and some, I have some money, and I have about $100,000 saved in different pockets, which I'm really happy about. But my question is about, I just got this financial planner through the Equitable firm, you know, when I was, because he kind of partnered with my district way back when, and I'm not actually sure how to utilize him, whether I have enough money or income to like justify a financial planner. And how do I tell if he's a good one or one of these salesmen that you're talking about? And how do I interpret the fee schedule that he sent me?
So you asked that person all those questions you just asked me. You know, how are you paid? Are you paid through commission? Do I pay you a one-time fee for this advice? I love that the places that you work have provided financial planning help for you. My company did that. They had a little beta program, and you know, I was the first in there to get that. And we had, and it was like, well, what do you need it for, Michelle? I was like, I need it too. And so we sat down with the planner that my company paid for, and we gave him our financial plan. I'm happy to say he tried to break our plan. He could not break our plan. He was like, y'all good. And so you want to look at, I think the most important thing right now, there's different types. There's an alphabet list of people who provide financial advice. But if you're really not sure, look for someone who is a fiduciary. And what that means is that person has to recommend advice that is in your best interest. Now, that sounds like common sense. Like, what? Why wouldn't they do that anyway? But a fiduciary will do that. But if you don't go with someone like a CFP who's a fiduciary or someone like that, you want to ask them, how are you paid? And don't be scared or intimidated. How am I paying for your advice? What do you get out of it? So all those questions that you just asked, you ask that person. It could be that some may not take you on because you don't have a lot of investable investings. And so that's okay too. Maybe you're not at that point yet. You want to go to the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors. It's a site where you can find fee-only planners, and you can put in your zip code and it'll come up with some people and interview a couple of people. My husband and I have had fiduciaries, and we have found people who were not. And I have to tell you, some of the best advice has come from someone who was not necessarily a fiduciary, but the difference was that we questioned, I looked up and researched everything she told us. But I will say this, that having a financial planner really put my husband and I on the path to create wealth for our family. And I'm so ever grateful to that person who showed us how to put money in a 529 plan, who encouraged me to not be so conservative in my 401k plan. I had bonds, y'all, in my 20s. It was crazy. And she showed me that I needed to take more risk. And so there is a lot of help that you can get from a financial person, but do your due diligence.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And congratulations to you, Sol, for saving so much. We're going to go to Bill, who's calling from Blue Hill. Bill, we're almost out of time. So if you could be quick, that'd be great.
I will. I was just going to say that Social Security full retirement now is no longer 65. It's almost 67. So for a lot of our kids, even people that are probably in their 40s or even maybe early 50s, full retirement may be closer to 70.
Yeah, thank you. And I see Michelle nodding on that. And Michelle, That's before we go, I'm going to squeeze in this last email because I know you're going to want this email. And we just have about 45 seconds. Please ask Michelle to speak about retired persons giving back, how to spend down your savings as you age while making sure you can cover your needs.
I love that. It's a 30 seconds. That's right. I am not good at it. I'm gonna tell you right now. I will hold on to a penny till Lincoln screams. But if you have saved all your life, that this is the time to spend money on things that make you joyful. Be prudent about it, right? You don't want to go through all your money. But please, for those misers, I shouldn't say misers, those penny pinchers, because misers are not good. Penny pinchers out there, who's also driving your spouses crazy because you won't let go of any of the money. Let it go. Have some fun. You can have fun and still be prudent.
And that's hard for a lot of people, isn't it?
It's hard. It's hard for me. I'm telling you, my husband's retired. He's like, let's do this. I'm like, no. He's like, look, you know, if we don't spend it, our children will be happy to spend it. And when he says that, I let go of the penny.
Well, Michelle, as always, just wonderful advice from you. And I apologize to everybody who wasn't able to get their question through, but you can subscribe to Michelle Singletary's newsletter at the Washington Post website. Michelle Singletary, nationally syndicated personal finance columnist for the Washington Post. And you can go to get her newsletter. It's called The Color of Money, and get advice on how to save, spend, and talk about your money for the short and long term. Today's sound engineer was Sam Tracy. Tomorrow on the program, animal welfare in Maine, how pets and other domestic animals who have been neglected or abused are cared for in the state. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.